Hello and welcome to another GRD interview, which most of you have probably seen because while we remembered to put up the video of the interview, we completely forgot, to put up the audio for the interview. So here it is from the magical weekend that is Mysticon, a fantastic convention in beautiful Roanoke, Virginia, an amazing place you should come visit. And got to say big thanks to Leslie, to Carl, to Carla, to Bob, to Robert, to Tina. Thank you all so much for putting on a fantastic convention. This, of course, is the greatest geeky moment of my entire life in which I get to sit down and talk to the fifth Doctor himself, the one and only Mr. Peter Davison.
Hi, Billy Flynn for Geek Radio Daily here with the man, the myth, the legend, star of stage, screen, the whole intergalactic process, Mr. Peter Davison. Thank you, sir, so much for sitting down here today.
I love your applause. Thank you very much indeed.
How could you not? Now, of course, all I'd really want to do is ask you everything about the 50th anniversary, but I'm sure you can't say a word about that.
You know, I don't really know an awful lot about it, to be honest with you.
Well, then, of course, what I have to know more than anything else of everything you've ever done, back in the Tomorrow People, how torturous are tickling boots?
You see, this is this morning on I did this TV thing, I mentioned that the fact that although it's very nice that Doctor Who is available on video, there are some things you wish had sort of slipped into obscurity. and you've hit on one there, the Tomorrow People.
Well, the when tickling I made it, boots I is a memory.
Yeah, it would never be seen again, but it's still haunting me to this day.
Haunting? As an alien named Elmer, how could you be haunted?
It was my first TV performance ever. So, yeah, it was interesting. Yeah, the tickling boots, that was all acting. It's amazing, isn't it?
From the heart. How you were overlooked for an award, I'll never know.
I don't know.
Well, after tickling boots, is that what made you decide I want to do the strangest things possible? Is that why you were the dish of the day in Hitchhiker's Guide?
Do you know, it's simply that that's the way fate led me. You know, there was no design. There never has been any design in things I've done. I've just been, for the most part, very fortunate that things I've done have been things that I wanted, things I was offered, things I wanted to do. And Hitchhikers came about because they were making the program, and I was married to someone at the time who was in it, and they said, oh, we've got this part coming up that's completely unrecognizable. We want to get someone well-known to do it, but he doesn't mind being sort of hidden beneath a ton and a half of makeup. And so my wife said, oh, Peter will do it. And it seemed like a neat idea because I was a big fan of the radio series.
Outstanding.
So just to be a part of the TV version was good.
It is amazing, even though the Tomorrow People may not be considered, but it's still sort of a classic now. So you've been in a lot of classic things, and you always seem to have fun in everything you do.
Yeah.
You seem to have a ball in All Creatures Great and Small as Tristan.
Yes.
I mean, you
yes.
were just mischievous. Was that just a chance to just
it was,
eat the scenery?
It was a gift of a part, really. It was just a gift of a part. I can't tell you, you know, for a sort of, as they would say, breakthrough part to be given the thing where you just can muck around for, you know, a number of years. So it's terrific. I had all the sort of funny bits, really, and, which was great. I barely had to do any work. Just had to smoke Woodbine cigarette. That was the worst thing. They had these cigarettes,
right?
Pre-war, I guess, and during the war, where it had no filters.
Okay, you have to be a man to smoke.
And they were really strong cigarettes. Woodbines, they were called. And when people used to smoke them when I was growing up, I remember, and they would do this. And I didn't realize quite what they were doing, but what they're doing is they inhale and they get a mouthful of bits of tobacco because there are no filters on. So they spend the whole time going.
Nice. Okay.
And that's what I ended up doing in the thing. If you look very closely at those other episodes of All Creatures, I never inhaled because if you inhale, you just start coughing.
It makes it tough to give the lines.
Yeah. So most of the scenes start with me going, I get a mouthful of smoke going, so the scene would start to go, action, I go, that would be all you saw.
Well, you've done quite a bit of comedy. I mean, you got to be in The Last Detective, which mm-hmm. was a fun, again, off-the-wall part. Are you just naturally off the wall?
I'd like the idea of being slightly off the wall.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm full of admiration for people who are truly off the wall. I'm not sure if I really am. I'd love to be a little more off the wall than I am. You know, I'm trapped in that sort of English repressed state that, you know, we're born into.
True Brit.
Yeah. Yeah. But no, I love The Last Detective because I remember when they put it to me and they said, we're not sure about this because we're not sure if you can have a sort of comedy detective if you're solving real cases. I said, well, of course you can mix the two. It's a comic. It's just slightly lighter than most detective sort of stories. And I think it worked perfectly well.
It was quite a fine time. Mm. So, of course, Doctor Who, we have to talk about that. But who was your doctor?
Well, the first two doctors, really. William Hartnell I started off with for 3 years, and then Patrick Troughton took over. And I think probably he would be my perfect doctor, because he had the most difficult job. He was the first regeneration. No one had thought about that ever happening. It didn't start off like that.
Indeed.
It was just William Hartnell playing Doctor Who. But I remember sitting down to watch it and assuming that I was going to hate it because it was no longer William Hartnell. And he just won everyone's hearts within the first episode.
Well, back when I first started watching Doctor Who, it was the early 80s. So there was no internet, there was no nothing. This was something I found in our PBS stations here. And it was Tom Baker at the time they were showing. And one day he turned into you.
Yes.
And I was so confused. I was a little mad at the time.
Well, funnily enough, I'm often asked that when I come over here. And I think it's a problem that people over here had, Tom Baker suddenly becoming me. But it's not a problem people had in
no,
Britain.
No, not at all.
Because he was the fourth, and I was simply the next one in the line. Admittedly, he'd done it for 7 years, which is a long time. But over here, I was very aware when I came over and did my first convention in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the Hotel Camelot. Bizarre. Okay. So that's just the applause.
Yeah, woo! The crowd goes wild.
And I was aware that they'd only ever seen Tom Baker, and that I was a... So half the questions I was asked at that convention were actually about All Creatures Great and Small.
Okay.
Or, apart from a couple, which were about stories that Patrick Troughton had done and John Pertwee had
done. Well, you're the same guy.
I thought, yes, exactly. And I thought, they really believe I am the same person as Patrick Troughton. And,
well, was that a lot of difficulty for you? At the time, you were the youngest doctor.
Yeah.
So it was sort of different. And they sort of changed the character up. They took away the sonic screwdriver.
Yeah.
You had to be just more about your brains.
Yeah.
Was that a problem for you, or is it a way to make it your own?
No, you have to look at the old doctors. And I went away and I looked at tapes of John Pertwee and Tom Baker, who I'd seen least of all. And you just pick up little bits, and it was so ingrained in me, the idea of Doctor Who. You just have to make your own doctor, and I thought I was too young when I did it. Oddly now, in the presence of the new doctors, I don't seem young at all. I just seem like the first of the new breed, actually. But at the time, I did feel that I was sort of a much younger doctor, and I just thought I could run quicker.
We had the shoes for it.
Yeah, exactly. I could run faster and I could change direction more quickly than the previous doctors. And that was really what I based my character on. Pretty feeble, isn't it?
Okay. Works for most people. My wife would never forgive me if I didn't ask you if there was ever a time in which you decided to eat the celery.
I did eat the celery. Yes, no, I did take a bite of it in one of the... I forget which one. Well, there's one story, I think, Enlightenment, where we go around a party and I do pick up real celery and go... Oh, celery. The terrible thing is, I don't like celery. Can't bear celery. So at the end of the take, I go, like the woodbines. And I think in the last story, I ate the celery because, in fact, when they told me that I was going to have a stick of celery in my lapel, I said, I don't mind that, as long as you explain why the heck I've got this celery in my lapel. And we got to my very last story, and I pointed out to the producer that they had not yet explained why I had celery on my lapel. So they put something in Caves of Androzani where it's I'm allergic to the gas. And in the presence of this certain gas, the celery changes colour, and I'm able to eat it, and it's an antidote.
Nice. It's your Popeye spinach.
Exactly,
outstanding. Well, I know Patrick Troughton advised you to play the Doctor for 3 years to avoid being typecast.
Yeah.
But you obviously love the role. You've come back to it, Dimensions in Time, Time Crash, all the Big Finish audio works. Is that something you like to do, being able to come back on your terms?
It's not even on my terms. I think that I feel... any way that you kind of owe it to the viewers, if they want to see you or you want to do, they want to have product with you in it, to do it. I do feel that it's very much, it's kind of close to my heart, really, Doctor Who. The biggest thing, though, is that I in a way, is that I escaped from it. You know, I when I left Doctor Who, I was very worried. I'd done it for 3 years, but it's such an identifiable role. That I was worried that I wouldn't work again. But in fact, I did, and I moved on. So coming back to it is a very nice thing to do, because I don't feel like it's ever going to impede my progress. I say progress, I'm getting past it, you know, so I should be retiring. But, you know, do you know what I mean?
I'm able to come back
with a will and not be affected by it. So it's a great pleasure.
That's outstanding. And I know you're having a lot of fun now with Law & Order UK, which is fascinating for us in America, only used to the system over there by way of Monty Python sketches.
Confusing, isn't it?
Just a bit. So I do want to say you have a fantastic time this weekend. It was an honor to talk to you, sir.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
So make sure you visit Mysticon-VA.com and start planning for your trip to Mysticon 2014 featuring Marina Sirtis, Todd McCaffrey, and a whole slew of fantastic folks. Once again, thank you to Leslie Cotter, Carl Kesner, Carla Brendel, Bob Flack, Robert Swigert, and Tina Vargo for putting together one of the most amazing conventions you will ever go to. And of course, from the bottom of both of my hearts, thank you so much to the one and only Mr. Peter Davison. And we'll see you at Mysticon 2014. Come check it out more at geekradiodaily.com.